Welcome to the Predictable Revenue Podcast, where frontline sales leaders teach you how to build and scale an outbound sales team.
Welcome back to the Predictable Revenue Podcast. I'm Colin Stewart, your co-host. I'm joined by my co-host, Cardboard Cutout Aaron. He's as elevated as and as excited as possible. Our guest today is somebody you might recognize if you've bought outreach recently, Brian Gerard. Welcome to the show. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me. Stoked to be here.
Yeah, excited to have you, especially with Unleash coming out. What is that, end of the month?
We're running it May 6th through 8th. Right. So it's coming up the beginning.
Cool. So I think the timing of this episode will probably come out a little bit before, probably the week before. So if you're listening now and you want to check that out, where can they find more information on Unleash?
Yeah. So if you guys check out unleash.outreach.io, we have all of our speakers up there. We're going to have people from Palo Alto Networks, DocuSign, a bunch of our big customers speaking, so you can learn the best practices of outreach, and also Tony Robbins' right-hand man, Joseph McKillen.
Amazing. So, it sounds
going to be awesome.
You've got some ex-Tony Robbins people within outreach yourselves, right?
We do, actually. So our SVP Revenue Operations, Matt Millen, basically my boss's boss, he used to run Tony Robbins' entire sales team.
Wow.
So taking from the energy and the passion and, you know, the mindset from that type of group is pretty amazing to instill at this conference. You go away feeling good.
Right on, man. It sounds really exciting. So we're going to talk today about, as an account exec or just a salesperson in general, how do you assess and how do you find a good job in sales, right? There's so many different options, so many different sales structures, different compensation packages. It can be really hard, especially as somebody new into sales, to find that right job. So right. We're going to talk a little bit about your journey today. And then we're going to end up with a sort of 10-point outline in terms of, like, these are the things to look for when you're trying to assess a new sales opportunity. Sound like
okay? Let's do it.
Right on, man. So tell me a little bit about outreach, and then maybe we can back up and talk about how you found outreach.
Sure. So outreach is a sales engagement platform. So basically, we're solving the challenge that salespeople have had for years, to where we've been focused on updating Salesforce. We've been focused on doing everything manually. We've been focused on following up on all of our leads through a process that we all create separately. So essentially, the idea of outreach, in a really short nutshell, is we control all of the updating for you. We make sure to increase your activity by automating a lot of it, and also making sure that you keep parts personalized that are needed. Ultimately, increase activity 2 to 3 times.
Cool. And so, what's your role here at Outreach?
I am the director of sales at Outreach.
Perfect. What does that mean?
It's a good question. So I was the 15th employee at Outreach about 3 years ago. I'm still selling. So I'm still in an IC / like leadership role, I guess you can say, to where I still carry a bag, which I love. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, I also help with like mentoring other people coming into outreach or starting new programs when there's gaps and something internally that needs to be fixed, just because I know the product and the company so well. But at the end of the day, I'm holding a number and I have to hit that number every single year and every single month.
Very cool. I love that you're still carrying a bag. That's amazing. I don't want this episode to come off as an outreach commercial. I feel like we've already talked about, you know, your company more than we would normally with a sponsor, but just because you guys had that event coming up, I thought it'd be interesting for people to find out.
Sorry.
But that's okay. we'll just blank out the name of the company like 100 times. We'll let you have one. Fair deal?
That's fine.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, if you want me to do it differently, I can.
No, I'm just messing around. but I want you to tell me about your journey into sales, because I know, I mean, you had a bit of an interesting journey from, you know, college, and eventually ended at Outreach, where you're obviously very happy. But let's try and approach that. Hey, I'm very happy here, without too much of a sales pitch for, hey, this is why it's awesome to work at Outreach.
Okay.
So let's talk about UCSB. So tell me about your experience there, and what were your next steps from college?
Yeah. So I I basically went to college at UCSB. I graduated in 2006. If you know the reputation UCSB, it's a great college, but difficult to find a job in a very small ritzy town. So what I ended up doing is actually moving up to San Francisco to the tech world. And my first job was in a mortgage industry, actually. So I just needed to get out of the town, and I joined this 100% commission job. It was a full sales cycle, doing everything from start to close. And what I didn't realize is that I got that job in 2007, right before the crash. So that was a good learning experience, but it's definitely where I learned how to sell and prospect.
Yeah. So. I was also in a similar industry in 2007, 2008, and watched a relatively large commission check dissolve on me as our company was going under. Market timing is a good one, but we'll talk a little bit about that later. So you were on this 100% commission job. Where did you end up next?
So after the market started crashing, realized this probably wasn't going to be the best industry to stay in for the long term. So I ended up going to LoopNet. And that was my first really technology job up in the Silicon Valley. Mm-hmm. Really when I first started to learn about how corporate structure is really set up, when you start to use Salesforce in a job, how to follow up and actually keep track of hundreds of clients because they mostly sell to SMB realtors. Mm-hmm. And first, or I should say second time that I was truly successful at a company, but I was still a baby. Mm-hmm. So I only ended up staying there for about, I want to say, 2 years. And part of the reason I left is because of a personal relationship, wanting to come back home. Mm-hmm. And so throughout my whole life, I've basically switched jobs every year and a half, sometimes even shorter. Mm-hmm. And so part of that, it taught me how to learn to really what to look for eventually after I did enough jobs. But mm-hmm. I went from the real estate industry to online industry to marketing industries to the software industry. So I kind of got a good gamut of everything together.
Mm-hmm. And even at LoopNet, you were still, I mean, you started as a mortgage broker, you went to LoopNet, which was software, still kind of selling into the real estate industry, right?
I was. Yeah. I mean, the difference was instead of selling customers, I was selling real estate agents. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it was still same thing that I really knew what I was talking about.
Gotcha.
And I, go ahead.
Is real estate something that you're passionate about?
Yeah. I mean, my mom's in real estate. So, and she's been in real estate for the past 15 years. Mm-hmm. So that was the first sign of what I saw someone being successful. So I thought I'd start there. And started to learn the ins and out of how realtors work, how they have to manage their entire business and make sure that they had a platform to do it with.
Cool.
So it's the first time I actually connected technology to an older profession.
Okay. That's exciting.
Yeah.
Also an interesting sales process. I've tried something similar with trying to bring technology into the welding industry. Our success rate was less than stellar. Still lots of sales, but just not what it should be for the investment that I think our company had made in the technology. I get the feeling you did a little bit better though.
I wasn't spending the dime. I didn't know at the time.
That's fair. You know, I think the pattern that you talk about, spent a year, year and a half, 2 years at a variety of companies, throughout your early 20s, mid 20s, a pretty common pattern I've seen in a lot of account execs and closers. So for somebody that's maybe new into sales, because it's, changing jobs, I mean, in some ways it's almost a good thing, right? Where you're getting a variety of experience selling, different products, different markets, different industries. So you get to know what you like. But on the flip side, you're not really spending all this time building expertise in these topics, subjects, markets, products that you're never going to use that again. So for somebody that's looking for looking at a new sales opportunity, how would you recommend they assess it?
Yeah. So the few things that I learned is first, you touched on it, is that I first started to love real estate. So when I started to look at all the industries after LoopNet, I started to realize that I love technology. Pretty common pattern, especially like in, you know, in our industry. So the first thing I was looking at was the product. But when I was looking at the product, my ultimate goal is, for me, I wanted to be part of some sort of startup that had the story that we hear, that, you know, the Facebooks of the world, you know, the Googles of the world, that you start really small and eventually it grows into this massive billion-dollar company. But finding that was really, 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 really hard to see when I was young. And so the first thing I started to look at, and I thought the product was the first place to start, but I missed all the other things around, you know, what's my boss like? Am I really interviewing this guy for someone that I'm going to enjoy working with? Or am I just trying to interview him because I want the job so bad? What's the culture like? Is this a job where I have the freedom to be myself, or are they so stuck on process that they're going to force you to do something that you're not comfortable with? Mm-hmm. So those are probably the top three that I would go with, is product, boss, and culture.
Yeah.
There's a bunch of other subsets, but those are the three that I started to learn. I need these three things to be comfortable to even decide to move on to another job.
And so those three things are sort of pass fail to you.
Exactly.
Okay. So before we jump into, I want to go through each one of these, but before we jump into each of those, what are some of the other ones?
So beyond the technology part of it and what I'm selling and kind of how it relates to how technology I was selling to real estate agents, mm-hmm. the type of market that you're in. So I've sold to people, DMV clerks, I've sold to like DMV back office people, I've sold to SMBs, I've sold to mid-market, I've sold to consumers, like you name it. And so like you start to get a flavor of who do you like to talk to, mm-hmm. and who's going to enjoy your product. So that was a big one for me. The founders of the company, starting to understand, like if you're getting into a smaller company, much easier to assess. You know, you probably have an interview with them. But if you're going into a bigger company and you want, and you don't have a chance to do that, then doing your research on PR and like understanding what type of publicity this person has and what type of ethics this person has was really important to me. Like, is this person a fair person, or are they, you know, you can imagine a whole bunch of other things.
Are they not that?
Yeah, exactly. What is the ultimate goal of the company? Like, what's their vision and then like future growth? So obviously everyone wants to become successful, but digging in and understanding how are they going to get there? What's the stage of their growth? What type of funding do they have? What type of investors do they have? Are they good investors? So you can understand eventually, if you are coming into an early stage company, what does that equity actually mean to you? Mm-hmm. So that was really important to me. That falls into also understanding the package that you're being offered. So of a mix of commission to base to bonuses to salary to incentives, whatever that is, what makes you the most happy with something that you can live your life with and also grow the life that you want to have eventually, grow into, I should say. And the last thing, support. So how much support do you have? If it's a startup, do you like being a self-starter? Do you want to create some more support systems for new people coming in? Or is it a big company and what type of training programs do you have? So a lot of that is, you can ask about it, but it's hard to tell right from the beginning unless you ask for some time on the floor.
Gotcha. Yeah. And 100% makes sense. So I love the overview there. Let's dive into product. Cause I think you said your top three were product, boss, and culture, right? So let's spend the most time here. And then if we have time, we'll get to talking about the other ones. But if I'm a new sales rep or a new into a sales role, how do I determine, like, how do I assess if this is a good product, bad product, product I love, you know, where do I start?
Yeah. So, I mean, the first thing I would do if you can is, depending on the product, like some you can go and use, you know, so it's easy to go in there, download it, ask for a copy, play with it, see if it's something that you get. Mm-hmm. If you can't do that, then I mean, the biggest thing is to go to their website, look at their clients, look at the reviews, and then also look at their competitors. So you can understand what is the type of market out there and how are people assessing these products against each other. We could typically get a pretty good sense of where they stand in the market. Mm. Beyond that, it's hard to tell unless you go and talk to the customers themselves.
And I bet you'd get hired so quickly if you would, in the interview, say, oh yeah, I actually talked to two of your customers and they said they like this and this and this.
Exactly.
I think that blew me away if I was hiring an account exec.
If you really wanted the job, there's a good tip.
Okay, so that's looking at the product. And I think you sort of pointed out like earlier, it's got to be something that you care about. I imagine that's a hard fought, you know, piece of knowledge that you've earned. Have you ever sold something that you weren't super excited about?
Yeah. Probably the biggest company I worked for at the time was Reach Local. And at the time it was in their heyday. Like I was coming in when they were at their peak. And so for me, that wasn't really a good thing. You know, it was certain territories that were already, you know, basically diminished. And there were so many different product lines, it was hard to focus on 10 of them at once coming in new, where you're doing everything from start to close. Mm-hmm. So this is also during the time when it's still huge, but search engine marketing was on the rise. Mm-hmm. And it was hard to distinguish like what they were actually doing in the back end compared to the other 1,000 agencies that were out there. So I had trouble with the size of the company believing what they were telling me to sell. And so that led to me leaving that company.
Gotcha.
But so, yeah, go ahead.
No, I was just agreeing with you. If you don't believe in the product and the company and in the vision and what you're providing, I mean, it's sort of our job as salespeople to, you know, help onboard prospective customers that think we can help with, you know, to the product company service and help them sort of solve their problems. And if you don't fundamentally believe in what you're trying to sell, it's almost, you know, disingenuous to take home a paycheck and take home a commission check.
Exactly.
I know I felt that way selling. I was talking to a colleague about this earlier today. I used to sell roofing products and I had one of the worst territories in Vancouver. And it was one of those ones where you're like, I'm selling a premium product to a very low income area. I'm like, I don't feel good about trying to convince somebody that, you know, this is the right solution for them when you're making decision of this, you know, I don't even know what the alternatives were they were going to spend their money on, but they've got a leak in their roof and that's a really emotional decision. It just wasn't something I was super comfortable with, you know, and others loved it because, hey, when you've got a leaky roof, there's motivation like no other, right? You absolutely have to do something. So I know some certain people love that, but for my particular territory, I was not a fan of selling patches and new roofs for a premium price.
That's fair. Yeah. I mean, that would kind of pull at the heartstrings a little bit.
Totally does. Yeah. So without getting too sentimental and sappy, you said next. So the top three product boss culture, talk to me about boss. How do you determine if somebody's going to be a great boss or not?
So I actually saw a post like earlier today that to be a good boss, you always have to be, I believe, asking, you know, your employees, like, what can I do to help you? How can I make you succeed? And I've had both bosses, ones that are more about themselves. I mean, I've had a boss to where the company missed the goal. And on the call, he talked about how he's going to get a lesser, you know, commission check now because we missed it. Hmm. And when I heard that, I was like, so are we. We're trying to do it. But
yeah.
And then I've had other ones that, you know, they eventually, after I've been through enough jobs and had more confidence in myself, where they really stood out to try to help me and support me and what I needed to actually take the job. And you know, like you can tell when someone's willing to like generally help you compared to if they're just hiring you just because they think they can help themselves. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I mean, that's probably where I'd leave it.
That's a huge piece, especially early in your career. I think that's one thing that I made a huge mistake underestimating how important having a good boss was, and just sort of the difference between somebody who's in it for themselves, like you said, you know, I'm here to hit a number and you've got to make me look good, versus somebody who's willing to spend the time and invest in you. It's like you said, it's hard to put into words, but again, I might argue it almost belongs higher on the list, but you know, it's the top three are really binary. They almost sit next to each other.
Yeah. I mean, we're all different personality types. So you have to determine if you vibe with the person or not, because you're going to be spending a lot of time with this person training you, and some just don't click. Mm-hmm. So, I would even ask for, a couple times, on the last job that I took, it took me 2-3 months to make the decision to actually take the job. And that was us doing 6 or 7 interviews, you know, me coming back with all these questions and hopefully having him come in and me believing in what he was telling me from the metrics he was showing and what he was allowed to show me not being part of the company. But eventually it swayed me over to believe that this was the right place for me because I'd be able to grow.
Gotcha.
And he taught me stuff and made me a better person of how I can be less selfish, basically. So
less selfish.
Yeah. I mean, less selfish. I don't want to think about it as talking about just a job's just important for yourself to take. I mean, it is to grow, but you also want to think about the team around you. And if I have a leader actually doing that, then it's going to help me to be the same type of way if I'm successful in a company. Hmm. So instead of actually being, you know, for example, I don't have the title as a VP of sales. I necessarily don't want it right now because I like carrying a bag right now. Mm-hmm. But I still do leadership types of projects within the company to make sure we help stay unified and communicate and help new people coming up, even though I'm not getting compensated for that. Hmm. And I wouldn't have been able to do that as much if I didn't have a boss that did that with me.
And I think that's such a critical piece that if you plot your career trajectory, and you look at the, you know, all the contributing factors to the sort of the angle of attack, your boss, the difference between a good boss and a bad boss can really change that angle so much. And I could probably point to 2 or 3 people in my past that have, you know, some have flattened it out a little bit more and others have been just helped me really hit the wall and overcome some, you know, maybe internal pieces that I was conflicted on or, you know, coach me with the right thing at the right time, because what they were able to bring to the table was exactly what I needed as a rep to develop and really reach, you know, be 100% as a salesperson.
Right. And do they trust you to go down the right career path too? Mm-hmm. So they're going to lead you down.
Exactly. Yeah. And the last of the big ones, we're talking about culture. So talk to me about, why don't we start with an example of a culture that we don't have to name names or name the company, but can you give us an example of a culture that you didn't really jibe with?
Yeah. So I'm trying to put this in the right words. I mean, it again relates back to your boss, but I mean, the boss kind of creates the culture, at least your immediate culture there, you know, with your sales team. And the one that I was in that I remember the most, it was more of, I had just gotten the job as a manager. I was up in San Francisco training for a month. And the first meeting I got on where this office was killing it. This office was the top office out of 4 offices around the country, doing really well. And he still gets on the phone and starts yelling at people how we're not doing good. Hmm. And so there was no motivating factor there to congratulate people for what they've done and bring them up. And correct course at the right time with certain people. And so when it created that culture, that I think that spread around all of the sales offices to where it made you feel like you didn't want to speak up. So if you can't feel like that that you have a voice there and that you're just going to get turned down and not listened to, then eventually you're going to fade out. Mm-hmm. So go ahead.
No, I was just going to add, like, some of that comes from, like you said earlier, your boss and the type of person that they are. Some of that comes from the way the company is organized and structured in terms of, are they private? Are they public? Where are they at in their lifetime? And not excusing them at all, but like, they could have been in a spot where if they don't hit that number, they're fired, or they could have just been an asshole. Right. And so it's up to you as part of the interview process to try and figure out, where is this company, which will help you sort of zero in on where these people are coming from.
Yeah. And a lot of it too, I think, comes down to, besides the boss, and sorry, I went back to that point, but a lot of it comes down to like the core values, mm-hmm. like of the company. So certain core values that I always try to look for are people trustworthy? Do people in the company have each other's back? Is there support there? Do people have grit? Are they willing to work their asses off? Mm-hmm. And that's why I always say, like, if you really want to go to a company and verify it, go spend a day there, go spend a couple days there and see how people work and see how they're willing to help you. Even if you're not a part of the company yet, they'll still want to put a good influence on you if they see that you're going to help the company get to the next level that they're all going. So that's huge, huge part that how what comes from leadership instead of just a boss, but how they represent those types of feelings across the company and how they actually execute on those through certain actions. Mm-hmm.
And I mean, when you think about it, a day is such to invest something like that is such a small amount of time, especially when you're considering you're going to spend potentially a couple of years, at this organization. There's, if we're thinking about sort of culture, there's one really good book that we read as a team a couple of years ago. It was called The Five Dysfunctions of a Team, mm-hmm. Which is a great book to read as, if you're in a team environment. But if you're just trying to assess, hey, is this going to be a good organization, not a good organization? They've got a couple graphics. I'll link to one in the show notes. But if you can't see that, it's the sort of base is like the absence of trust. Then above that is the fear of conflict. Then above that is lack of commitment, avoidance of accountability, and then inattention to results. You can't have, right? It's shaped like a pyramid. And if you, at the very base, if you don't have trust, everything else above sort of falls off, right? But right. It's a good book, highly recommend reading it. But I think I've worked in organizations where we've sort of struggled with all of these, one more than the other. But the real challenge here is they all sort of lead to an inattention to results, right? We're all here to try and get to try and get something done, to try and accomplish something. And right. when you're more focused on internal stuff than external stuff, people, the key metrics that really matter just seem to fall by the wayside.
That's true.
So we've talked about, got to have a good product, got to have a strong boss and a great culture. The next one up is market. So talk to me about why is market important to you?
So it depends on the market that, I guess it depends on where you are in your career. Like if you want to go to a startup, then you really have to analyze the market potential. If you're already in a mid-sized or want to go to a large company, the market's already been proven, mm-hmm. but it still might be, like, for example, Salesforce, $11 billion company, but they have 40% of the market. Mm-hmm. So there's still quite a lot of growth there. It could be a very comfortable job.
Yeah.
But for me, I was specifically looking for new markets, especially because I just naturally went towards technology to see what could be changed. And that's a common theme these days, but a new market that's been untapped. What's the potential of that market? So how much can it actually grow? What problem is it actually trying to solve and for who? Mm-hmm. And because if I figure that stuff out, then I know who I'm selling to, which makes a huge difference. I mean, right now, and I don't mean to talk about outreach, but I sell to salespeople. It's awesome.
We're the best, aren't we?
It's the same language. if I'm talking to VP of sales all the way up to, not CEOs as much, it's a little different, But I mean, VP of sales down, I mean, you're speaking the same thing. We all started in the same place. Mm-hmm. So to me, that was super attractive because I can be completely myself. You know, we make jokes and we all know that it's about results. And I also understand what they were trying to achieve because I'm in their same shoes. Mm-hmm.
And I think when you're thinking about the market, it's important to be a little bit selfish here for a second, because what you said about, is this a wide open market? Is this a, you know, $11 billion market or a $100 million market in your, or whatever it is, whatever the math works out to, you know, you're 40% of the way through the market, or are you 100% saturated in the market? Because that's going to have a direct impact on your ability to succeed, your ability to close, no matter what the, you know, I think most sales jobs that you find are going to say, oh, 100K or plus, you know, 100K to, you know, whatever OTE. But your ability to actually hit that is going to be determined quite a bit by the product and what the product's sort of status is and that company's status in the market.
And that's the timing that you're getting in too.
100%.
Yeah.
If the product's been in market for 20 years and the company hasn't made any investments in the improving the product, you know, it's going to be a bit of a tougher sell because there's going to be new incumbents that you're going after. If it's a brand new market, a brand new product into a existing market, you're going to be trying to peel out, you know, incumbents, which is definitely fun to go up against the big guys. I've done that a number of times and succeeded. And it's so much fun to beat, you know, Goliath. But again, it's a different type of sale than just, you know, selling something that's brand new into a brand new market where, you know, this has never existed before, right? The type of selling that you need to do for each of those, you know, markets and is going to be totally different. And I find that, you know, you might really enjoy one, you might not enjoy the other, right? The competitive jerk in me is like, I love peeling out an existing lazy old giant incumbent, right? There's just something inherently fun about that. you know, but when you're, you know, evangelizing something that's brand new is a totally different type of sale. So I think getting the experience and trying a couple different, sales models or selling to a few different markets is something that gives you a great amount of experience.
You also learn your selling style. I mean, if you're going into a brand new market that's never been tapped, I mean, you have to create the script. You have to create the reason you're better than the competition. And so if you like creating stuff like that, instead of just coming from leadership, then that's probably the most fun for me, where the ones that I failed at were already, either the market was too new. For example, like I was in a social media company where it was still too young. People didn't trust it yet.
Are you selling faster?
No.
I was in MySpace, man. Come on.
Hey, if I was fifth employee in MySpace, I'd be sitting pretty right now.
I don't know.
Tom sold it for a lot, didn't he? Well, Tom made money.
Yeah, possibly. I thought that one didn't go quite. I guess they sold to, they sold it okay. A pretty good time. Its Friendster disappeared. MySpace did disappear post-acquisition, basically.
Oh, you're right. Okay.
Yeah, I don't know. I can't say I know anybody from MySpace or Friendster.
All I know is Tom's picture. I mean, just if you want to venture out on new type of markets, be ready to explore and like try to figure it out, which I loved, or you can go for one that's already established and then pick the particular part of the sale that you really enjoy and just got to figure out what makes you happy. Mm-hmm.
And just avoid business to consumer.
Yeah. B2C is tough.
B2C is my least favorite.
Unless you like emotion.
It is a highly, highly emotional sell. It just didn't resonate with me. I shouldn't say avoid B2C, but Colin of the future of the past, avoid B2C for sure.
I mean, the crazy thing that's the growth that B2Cs go at is so fast compared to like B2B. Mm-hmm. So if you find the right one, you're in a good place, but yeah, it's hard. It's very hard. I mean, the mortgage company was you're dealing with people that have to refinance and can only pay a certain amount. And if you can't meet that, then like you said about the roof, selling to low income, mm-hmm. it hurts. Yeah. But business is business.
100%. People still get emotional, but at the end of the day, it's not, you know, oh, I need to, you know, if this costs a little bit more, it's literally taking food out of my fridge. Mm-mm. And that to me, I just didn't have the heart for it.
No, I agree.
Yeah.
B2B is a fun game.
Love it. 100%. Next. So we talked about the market. Let's blend sort of founders and future growth here, because we'll do this one and we'll do one more and then we'll call it, because we've already gone, you're probably at the 40-minute mark. This is really good content. I'm really enjoying the conversation here. So let's just tackle these last two. So founders, cool. And future growth and vision. I think we can kind of all roll these ones into one. So
yeah.
So what do you look for here? What's the most important to you?
So this goes back to my personal goal, really. My personal goal was all around finding a company that I could go and grow it to help bring it public. Mm-hmm. So out of the 12 companies that I've worked for, one got acquired, but I got in too late, and so my equity wasn't worth anything. Mm-hmm. So that's always been the thing I was looking for. And so what I found was, if trying to understand the different aspects of what a founder needs to have, one around leadership, one around inspiration, another one around like what they want to do with the company. Like, are they taking it just to sell it for themselves and the top execs, or do they actually want to build a long-term company that's going to last for 50 years down the road, 100 years down the road, that wants to go up against the, you know, the sales forces of the world? That's really, really, really hard to find, because I think that takes a lot of grit. And what was their story to get there? You know, that was one of the biggest things that resonated with me, is one, there was more than one founder where I'm at right now, which is pretty appealing to me, because it's like a checks and balances system. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, you know, it took 3 to 4 years to get to a comfortable place, and they kept going. So that was rare to find in my experience. So I guess understanding them a little bit more personally and what their motivations are, and if that matches with what you want, mm-hmm. then it's a good risk.
And especially important in a smaller company, right? Because the smaller the company is, the more risk you're taking on.
Right. Exactly. I mean, bigger company is a little harder to assess the founder.
You're not going to... Yeah, not going to be applying for an entry-level sales role at Salesforce and get a chance to sit down with Uncle Mark.
But no.
You still can read his book and see him at Dreamforce if you want.
It's true. Or we can see Zuckerberg in front of the Senate.
Yeah, don't you mean data? A couple of memes have been going around today that it's one of them actually like Photoshopped him into Data's outfit and like colored his face a little bit whiter, paler, so he really actually looked like Data. It was perfect.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
From Star Trek. Yeah.
Exactly. So, yeah. For all the folks.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Weren't Trekkies. So before we spiral too off topic, I think we saved a really important one for last, because there's so many different ways that companies want to compensate their salespeople, ranging from, I don't want to pay you a dollar until you close something for me, all the way up to, you know, I'm going to pay you a really large base and a bonus for when you close something.
Right.
The sort of middle is, you know, a reasonable base and that you can live off, but not a very comfortable life off. And then commission, and that's your upside. So what's been your experience so far? I know you started with 100% commission. How did you feel about that?
I mean, at the time, I was going to take anything, and I did okay. You know, I was pulling in like 50, 60 a year, which was great for my age. Wasn't the best, but it kept me afloat. Getting to the 50, 60 up to the 80, 100, that took years to do for me. And I only did that because I was able to get into a company and luckily move up a role, you know, with hard work. But it was hard to get there. But now when I start to look at commission plans and especially new people coming into sales jobs, I think it's trying to understand, one, how they structure the commission plan and why. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, a commission plan could sound amazing, but if you don't know if people are actually hitting it, and you don't know if it's just completely out of whack, if you're going to make it. And I've been in a couple of those too, where this is just completely unrealistic.
100%. You're going to make 100K a year right off the get-go. And you're like, okay, well, how many people in the company right now are making six figures? Oh, right. You know, and some will even say, oh, you know, most people are. It's like, okay, well, show me your standings, right? Like I want to see some data. Right. You're making a huge decision here. I'm making a huge decision here. The least you can do is show me the numbers.
Right. Exactly. And it's another part of interviewing some of the reps too, to see if it's actually happening. Also understanding how you're going to get there. You know, is this a place that has a bunch of inbound leads and marketing support, mm-hmm. or is this completely outbound? Are you doing all of your hunting? Do you have an SDR team? And so managing your time to see how much you have to sell to actually get there. Mm-hmm. This is numbers that I actually went through my head before taking my last few jobs, if it's possible. Mm-hmm. So.
And calculating that formula is such an important piece because it's basically outlining this is what your day-to-day is going to look like. And to not think through that ahead of time, you're really just jumping in blind. Right. So when you're looking at that package, sort of working the numbers backwards, and any sales manager or director that's worth their salt will work through this with you as part of the interview process and probably be impressed as hell that you're, you know, even having this conversation with them.
Right. If you're pushing back and making it sound realistic and your points are real, you're more valuable.
Totally. People want to hire people that can think critically. And I think there's too many sales roles that are hiring that just, where the founders aren't necessarily friendly towards the salespeople. They treat them as sort of, you know, if you close something, great, you're my best friend. But if you're not closing, you're on your way out the door.
I mean, to talk about SDRs, I mean, SDRs are huge. I mean, they are the blood of a company, you know, and the way we pay them should be increased, in my opinion. But that's another topic. But it's another way that it's just an example of, I think these types of roles as SDRs and AEs and this model matures, mm-hmm. We'll start to see a lot of changes around there, and the importance of the roles will change. Mm-hmm. And the commission will follow it probably.
Totally.
Yeah. We'll see.
So talk to me about some final thoughts on package. When you're looking at a compensation package, are you just looking at the base and the commission, or are you looking at other things?
So the base and the commission are definitely one of the most important things, obviously, but also flexibility of the work. So for me, later in life, I learned that working from home was a lot better for me than the office. Mm-hmm. So what's the flexibility there? The package around health, medical, dental, you know, what that means. Like, what are you planning for your future? Are you having a kid, you know, or do you have to support others? What do bonuses look like if you exceed quota, mm-hmm. Which is really important to know. And then what does the career path look like? And then other things are starting to come into play around, paternity leave and what types of package do they offer with kids? Like I think that's starting to become a norm. Mm-hmm. Salesforce and a lot of tech companies are starting to do that. So I think it's fair to start asking about that. Mm-hmm. Younger people, it probably doesn't mean as much yet, but you know, it'll get there eventually.
You know, it's surprising how many people I know that they started off in, you know, they started off as an entry level sales role and they've been at the company for 6 or 7 years. And you know, things that weren't super important when you started are now crazy important. And some of these people are now leaving and moving elsewhere because, you know, the company just isn't going to support them for that stage of life. And so it might, you know, when you're looking at things, might not be relevant to you today, but try and think ahead. I mean, maybe 7 years is way too far when you're looking at an entry level role. But try and think ahead of, you know, what am I going to need you know, a few years down the road.
Right. Yeah. I mean, all of it relates back to your personal goals, in my opinion. So, if you know where you're going and you're not just working to have some party money, then there's other things you got to think about.
I was sure you were going to quote Alice in Wonderland for a second there.
What's the quote?
I think it's something like, I'm going to get it wrong, but if you don't know where you're going, any direction will get you there.
Okay, there you go.
Yeah.
Perfect.
Yeah, I think it was the crazy cat, the Cheshire cat. Anyway.
Yep.
This episode has, I think we've accomplished what we were hoping to hit, you know, just in summary, it's product, boss, and culture in no particular order. In that exact order, that are the sort of binary, you know, pass fail. If the opportunity, you know, doesn't excite you for any one of those, then let's, you know, don't even bother with it.
Right.
One of the things that we're doing specific for this episode, we've got our marketing team. They're working really hard on an infographic. So check out the link in the bottom of this. It's going to have a little bit of a scorecard. And basically what you're looking for is, you know, a way of assessing each of your different roles. If you're looking at two or three different jobs, you know, here's a matrix so that you can basically plot them against each other. If you're looking at taking a new job, you know, some advice I got from a fellow entrepreneur was, you know, just in terms of how the math works, you know, it's got to be numbers wise, it's got to be twice as good. Right. So if your current job scores to be a 17, it's got to be, why did I pick such a hard number? Let's say 15. If your current score is 34. 15, yeah, you want it to be at least a 30. It's like, I'm trying to do math, read notes, make sure we wrap the article or the episode all at the same time. Like, I'm not going to do that math well.
You're killing it.
Yeah. So make sure you check out that infographic. And our team put a lot of time into it. Brian put a lot of time, sweat, and tears into figuring out all these different things, you know, by doing some of them wrong and doing a bunch of them right. And so if you're looking at a new role, definitely check this out. Brian, any final comments in terms of advice for somebody that's looking at a new sales role?
Just trust your gut. I mean, at the end of the day, I mean, if you feel something's off, try to understand what that is, relate it to this, you know, to this metric that's going to come out. And if anyone ever wants to reach out, you can always email me as well at brian.gerard@outreach.io.
Perfect. So that's great.
Really appreciate the time here.
Thanks for coming on the show.
Cool.
All right, man.
See you guys.
See you later.